Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, in a world that's always looking for new growth areas, new kinds of stability, it seems like businesses, states too, they're casting a wider net. And today, we're really zeroing in on a region that's, well, maybe surprisingly, emerging as a hotspot for global investors, Central Asia and the Caspian. We'll probably call it the CCA region mostly.
Yeah, and this deep dive, it's built around a pretty important new white paper from BCG. It's called Why Investors Are Turning to Central Asia and Caspian. It just came out September 2025. And it really goes deep on the investment potential in four key countries: Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan.
And it's really crucial to get a handle on the scale here. These aren't, you know, tiny isolated markets we're talking about. If you combine them, these four nations, you're looking at a population of 70 million people, and they generate, well, an impressive $440 billion in economic activity every year.
Wow.
Yeah, that puts them right up there with major emerging economies. Think Turkey or Egypt, maybe even Malaysia or Vietnam. It's a big slice of the global economy that, frankly, often gets overlooked. Exactly. So for you listening, our goal today, our mission really, is to quickly get you well informed. What makes this CCA region attractive? What are the, you know, the real hurdles it faces? And what could the future hold? All seen through this BCG analysis. We're going to unpack some pretty compelling insights, I think. Okay, so let's start with the foundation, the regional foundation. BCG talks about a vast untapped landscape. That sounds impressive, but what does it really mean on the ground?
Well, it's not just talk. I mean, physically, the landmass is huge, roughly 80% the size of the entire 27-nation EU.
80%? That's massive.
It is. And beneath that land, a geological treasure trove. Truly, you've got rich, largely unexplored mineral reserves.
Okay, like what specifically? What kind of materials are we talking about?
Think critical minerals. Over half the world's manganese and tungsten reserves are estimated to be there.
Half. Wow.
Yeah, and those are vital, right, for advanced manufacturing, high-tech green energy, and then significant shares of antimony, that's about 30%, zinc and beryllium, maybe 20%, plus uranium, molybdenum, silver, gold, about 15% of global reserves for those, and then copper, iron ore, titanium, arsenic, tin, maybe around 6 to 8%. It's a long list.
That is a long list.
Yeah.
So a potential powerhouse for diversifying supply chains then.
Exactly. Especially in a world focused on resource security. The one notable gap, though, according to BCG, is proven reserves of rare earth elements, you know, the ones critical for modern tech. They haven't found significant deposits yet anyway.
Interesting. Okay, so beyond digging things out of the ground, what about the economy itself? Is it diversifying?
Yeah.
And the people, the human capital?
Oh, definitely not just about resources anymore. I mean, resources were still significant in 2023, about 14.3% of GDP.
Yeah.
But manufacturing is right behind it, 13%, agriculture at 8.7%. So yeah, diversification is happening. And the human capital part, that's actually fascinating. You've got nearly 7 million workers with higher education.
7 million.
Mm-hmm. And another 11.5 million with vocational training. Now, most of those skilled workers are concentrated in Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan. But it's this combination, you know, vast untapped natural wealth and a pretty significant skilled labor pool. That's a foundation for growth that people often miss.
That's a really strong point.
Yeah.
But you also mentioned earlier, the region isn't like one single entity. Kazakhstan dominates the GDP right now, nearly 60%.
Yeah.
How do those country differences play out for an investor?
Yeah, that's a crucial distinction to make. Kazakhstan is the economic heavyweight currently. But Uzbekistan, it has nearly half the region's population, so BCG projects, it's going to rise significantly in importance. And their economic structures are quite different, too. Azerbaijan, for instance, very reliant on energy, kind of like a Gulf state model, whereas Uzbekistan is pushing a much more diversified growth strategy. So yes, we talk about the region, but you really have to look at each country's unique profile.
Right, okay. So building on that, let's unpack the trade dynamics a bit. Who are the big trading partners? Where's the money flowing?
Well, the relationships are, let's say, intricate. The key partners have been China, Russia, and the EU. What's interesting is that China has, for the most part, replaced Russia as the number one partner for most CCA countries recently. Azerbaijan is a bit different, leans more towards Europe, and Uzbekistan actually has the most diversified trade portfolio. Over half its trade is with a wider mix of smaller countries, not just the big three.
And exports. Still mostly energy, I assume.
Very much so. Hydrocarbons are still king. Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan together pump out about 4 million barrels of oil equivalent a day.
That's huge. Comparable to the UAE or Brazil, you said?
Exactly. Energy exports alone in 2024 were around $47 billion. That's like 60% of the total regional exports. Mining is also big, about $20 billion a year. Think Kazakhstan's base metals, Uzbekistan's gold, copper, uranium.
And how does that balance out? Trade surpluses, deficits?
It varies. Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan, they usually run trade surpluses thanks to energy, although they can face current account challenges because of, you know, profit payouts in oil and gas. Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan, on the other hand, they tend to face persistent trade deficits, though for Uzbekistan, remittances from workers abroad help stabilize things a bit.
Okay, so let's talk investment. You mentioned the potential, but the journey hasn't been smooth, right? The last decade saw price collapses, the pandemic, geopolitical issues. Mm-hmm. How has that shaped investment?
Yeah, those shocks definitely put a damper on momentum. Historically, Kazakhstan has been the main magnet for foreign direct investment, FDI. Pulled in maybe 75% of all the capital coming into the region, mostly from Western sources.
Right.
But China's become a really key investor too, especially in Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan. We're talking over a quarter of their total investment coming from China. But even with these flows, the core point BCG makes is that the region is still fundamentally underinvested compared to its potential.
So despite the resources, the demographics, the location?
Exactly. You've got the growing population, the low-cost skilled workforce we talked about, that strategic location, access to China-EU routes. Plus, they're making efforts at enacting new laws to reduce corruption. It should be more attractive.
Okay, so investors are starting to wake up to this. BCG talks about five main ways, five lenses through which investors view the CCA region. Could you walk us through those?
Sure. The first lens is the resource center. Simple enough. The world needs alternative suppliers for critical minerals, hydrocarbons, even food staples, right? Diversification. CCA fits that bill. Second, the trade gateway. Its location is key. It's a land bridge for EU-China trade. And that's becoming more attractive because of sea route disruptions, you know, issues in the Red Sea, plus a strategic move away from Russian rail and China developing its western regions as export hubs.
Makes sense. What else?
Third is the strategic buffer. For big powers in Eurasia, this territory offers security access, or it can act as a buffer zone. Geopolitics 101, really. Fourth, it's seen as a growth market. You've got 70 to 80 million consumers, and BCG projects' midterm growth could approach 10%. That's appealing.
10% growth potential.
Okay. And finally, number five, the manufacturing hub. That skilled labor pool we mentioned, about 21 million workers. With relatively high unemployment in some areas and urbanization happening, there's potential to build up manufacturing. So you see, these lenses show the different angles of appeal, but also the complexity, right? It's not just one thing. It's a whole collection of interconnected possibilities.
That really clarifies the different attractions.
Yeah.
But you mentioned complexity. Does that mean these different national interests could potentially pull things apart, or is the collective opportunity just too big?
Well, that leads us right into the challenges, doesn't it? Because we need a balanced view. BCG is clear that there are persistent barriers stopping the region from really hitting its full potential. It struggled, frankly, to get enough foreign investment beyond that initial oil boom after independence.
Okay, so what are the main hurdles?
Well, one is just scale limitations. Even combined, these four countries are maybe the size of the Philippines or Colombia economically. And critically, they are not an integrated economic bloc.
Right. You mentioned Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan are in the Eurasian Economic Union.
Yeah, but that union itself is kind of subscale, and it's been hit hard by sanctions on Russia, so it doesn't provide that big integrated market effect.
And a geography. Central location sounds good, but...
But being landlocked is the flip side. That's the geographic paradox. They need their neighbors, Russia, Georgia, Turkey, Iran, just to get goods to a port. That makes it really hard to develop those low-cost export models that worked so well for, say, Southeast Asian economies.
Okay, that's a big one. What about governance?
Governance is critical. BCG points out that growth has often come from these sort of opportunistic top-level deals of the century, usually focused on resources.
Big one-off deals.
Exactly. They bring in cash up front, sure, but they can create vulnerability, and they often don't help build a broader, more sustainable economy. Then there's the issue of state enterprise dominance. You have hyper-centralized decision-making, state-owned companies getting subsidies. It distorts the market, stifles competition, makes it tough for private businesses to thrive.
Okay.
And tied to that is the strong emphasis on national sovereignty, which is understandable, of course, but it does limit the regional cooperation that's really needed. And it allows bigger outside powers to kind of play the countries off against each other during negotiations.
And finally, any macroeconomic issues?
Yeah, there's macroeconomic instability, persistent trade deficits in some countries, fiscal deficits, and quite high hidden unemployment in certain areas. So, yeah, a fair few barriers.
So when you add all those up, The scale limits, being landlocked, governance issues, state control, fragmented cooperation, instability, it really paints a picture of why turning that potential into reality is, well, challenging.
It absolutely is, and it highlights this missing piece. Historically, markets like this often overcame fragmentation by integrating deeply with a larger power. Think U.S. influence on post-war Japan or South Korea, or the EU effect on Eastern Europe. But in Central Asia, no single organizing force like that has really emerged to pull the region together. Russia's influence was often directed elsewhere, the EU, mostly focused on getting alternative energy. China's invested heavily in infrastructure, yes, but hasn't really unified the region itself.
So that begs the question, right? Without that clear organizing force, how do they overcome fragmentation?
That's the million-dollar question. But BCG does highlight two emerging trends that might be starting to reshape things.
Oh, what are those?
First, Turkey. It's increasingly trying to position itself as a kind of unifying force, playing on shared cultural and linguistic ties to boost regional cohesion. And second, and this is quite significant, you're seeing major investments, multi-billion dollar deals coming from the Muslim world. Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the UAE especially, they're putting money into energy infrastructure, mostly in Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan right now.
Interesting. So new players entering the field, diversifying the influences.
Exactly, which signals a shift.
But what does that mean for an investor looking at the CCA today? Does it simplify things or complicate them?
For now, it probably means, as BCG suggests, there's no easy one-stop shop regional play. You really have to consider each market entry carefully on its own merits. The rules, the regulations, the market dynamics, they're still quite different across those four countries. It's still a patchwork.
Right, a complex patchwork unfolding within this larger, you called it a tectonic shift, driven by geopolitics.
Mm-hmm. BCG sees three new dynamics really driving change now. First, that growing, if still nascent, interest from China and Europe in maybe playing a more active organizing role. Second, the strategic need from Europe, and maybe the U.S. too, to secure new mineral supplies. De-risking policies, right? And the sums are huge. BCG estimates nearly $300 billion in global commodity purchases are potentially in play.
$300 billion.
Yeah. And third, just a fundamental reshuffling of global end markets and suppliers generally. Things are changing everywhere.
So to help navigate all this uncertainty, BCG developed a framework, right? The 2x2 matrix based on two critical forces for the next decade. They call it a time-sensitive window.
That's right. It's about understanding the key uncertainties. The first force is demand for new commodity suppliers. Basically, will the Western push to reduce reliance on Russia for energy and minerals and on China for critical minerals continue and keep prices high? The CCA is already plugging some gaps, Azeri gas to Southern Europe, Kazakh oil, uranium, other minerals. If demand stays high and prices stay high, that's a huge potential catalyst for investment.
Okay, so demand for their resources. What's the second force?
The second is trade barriers in global manufacturing. Essentially, how high will trade walls get between major blocs like the US, EU, and China? If barriers go up, could developing nations like the CCA become attractive neutral platforms, places for re-exporting or final assembly to navigate those tensions?
The friend-shoring or neutral-shoring idea.
Kind of. It could displace some China-US or China-EU trade. It could also, though this is higher risk, involve Russia sourcing sanctioned goods. But to really attract Western manufacturing, they'd be competing hard against North Africa, Southeast Asia, Latin America. Geopolitics plays a big role there, too.
Okay, so those two forces, commodity demand and trade barriers, they create four possible futures, four scenarios for the CCA over the next decade. This is where it gets really interesting. What are they?
Okay, scenario one, Klondike. This is high commodity demand but low trade barriers. Think a repeat of the early 2000s resource boom. Good for macroeconomics in the short term, but it probably deepens dependency on just resource extraction. Harder to attract complex long-term investment outside of mining and energy.
Got it. Resource boom 2.0. What's next?
Scenario two, era of complex deals. This is high commodity demand and high trade barriers. Now, this is interesting. Here, the CCA countries could potentially bundle deals, use their leverage from critical resources to attract investment in other sectors, maybe even geopolitically motivated investments. But crucially, this demands really strong domestic policy and execution from the CCA governments.
So using resources as a bargaining chip for diversification. Okay,
yeah.
Scenario three.
Scenario three, stranded in calm seas. This is low commodity demand and low trade barriers. Basically, a return to the tough conditions of the 2010s. Not enough investment, lots of opportunistic short-term deals, very few big strategic investments. A real struggle to attract the capital needed for growth.
the pessimistic scenario, and the last one.
Scenario 4, resellers' heyday. This one is low commodity demand but high trade barriers. Here, the CCA carves out a niche as neutral bridge countries. They focus on re-exporting and maybe some end-stage manufacturing between conflicted blocks. Their own consumer markets could become quite lucrative for surplus goods from elsewhere. Now, this needs a lot of cooperation between the CCA countries, massive upgrades to infrastructure, labor skills, risk compliance, but BCG suggests it might actually be the best long-term path to reduce that dependency on commodities.
Wow. Okay, Klondike, complex deals, stranded, or resellers' heyday. Four very different potential futures, all depending on how those global forces shake out. So given these vastly different outcomes, what's BCG's advice? Their call for strategic action for the CCA nations themselves. They can't just sit back and wait, presumably.
Absolutely not. BCG stresses this is a critical but time-sensitive 10-year window. Success really hinges on whether they can pull together, present a unified business case to the world, and offer investors a real solution to that problem of fragmented, insufficient market scale. It means being proactive. It means attractive policies, strong investment incentives, building institutions that can actually act on opportunities.
And moving beyond those deals of the century.
Exactly. Mastering what BCG calls smaller, more complex deals, bundling commitments across industries, figuring out how national interests align with foreign investment before deals are announced, getting internal agreements sorted so things don't get bogged down later. It requires real capability and demonstrating they can execute. They need to be active shapers of their destiny.
That makes sense. And this has big implications for global powers too, right? What's in it for Europe, China, the U.S. if they try to play an organizing role?
Well, for Europe, the rewards could be substantial, but the competition will be fierce. They'll need to be agile, cohesive, maybe learn from tricky integrations like Mercosur. For China, it's an attractive partnership, offers those indirect export routes that are harder for others to disrupt. The U.S., it's about securing resources, maintaining security access. Their tariff strategy might signal a desire for stronger economic ties, too. But critically, from the CCA perspective, they value their independence. They might see Western powers as partners in protecting sovereignty, sure, but they want genuine partnerships, partnerships that go beyond just extracting resources.
And for businesses looking to invest or collaborate on the ground, what are the opportunities?
Well, the CCA is still a rare growth market,
right,
relatively untapped in sectors like cars, construction materials, pharmaceuticals. Europe particularly could leverage its strengths in education, tech, capital things the CCA countries actively want as they try to upskill and digitize. BCG also suggests investors could pool resources, share risks through alliances that could protect investments, ensure fair outcomes, maybe allow medium-sized firms to play alongside the giants.
Collaboration to overcome fragmentation.
That's the idea. And focusing on providing tools and knowledge investing in things like geological surveys, helping build deeper production networks. Because the era of just grabbing easy-to-access resources, that's largely over. It requires more sophisticated engagement now.
Okay. So we've covered a lot of ground. You've just had a deep dive into this really compelling, but yeah, definitely complex investment landscape in Central Asia and the Caspian. All through that BCG lens, we've hit the vast resources, the skilled workforce, the strategic location, but also the significant hurdles.
And that crucial takeaway, the time-sensitive 10-year window of opportunity that could really shape the region's future path.
So as you're thinking all this through, we want to leave you with some direct questions, the ones BCG raises, really, things to ponder. Given that time-sensitive 10-year window, what signs, what indicators should investors be watching closely in the next few years? How realistic is genuine regional integration, given those strong preferences for national sovereignty we talked about? Which of those four scenarios, Klondike, era of complex deals, stranded in calm seas, or resellers heyday, which one feels most likely to you right now, based on current global tensions and trade dynamics? How sustainable are the competitive advantages for the different global powers, China, Europe, the U.S., Turkey, the Gulf states, engaging in the region? Will they last? And maybe the biggest question, can these CCA countries actually make the necessary institutional changes, build that capacity to really seize these opportunities? And finally, for any potential investor, how do you effectively balance the undeniable potential returns against those very considerable risks in such a dynamic region?
Yeah, lots to think about. And just remember, of course, this deep dive is based on one perspective, BCG's analysis. Anyone seriously looking to engage with the CCA needs to keep continuously monitoring how things develop, both regionally and geopolitically.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and we'll catch you on the next one.